This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. Well, the homework isn't complete, and it's because your child became distracted. Getting homework done is a real struggle. Well, there are so many ways to become distracted. And, you know, some distraction is a good thing. After all, time for play is good for all of us. But you've got to get your work done. And this can be a tall order for some children. They find it really hard to tune out all the noise of the world. Well, help is on the way. Our guest this afternoon is a family psychologist and the author of 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child. Our guest is Dr. Jeffrey Bernstein. He joins us to talk about how to help kids who are easily distracted. And you know, I suspect we might find some useful advice for keeping ourselves on task as well this afternoon. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Jeffrey Bernstein is a licensed psychologist specializing in child and family therapy in the Philadelphia area. In addition to 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child, he's the author of 10 Days to a Less Defiant Child and Why Can't You Read My Mind? 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child is available in paperback from Marlowe and Company. Again, the phone numbers 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Dr. Bernstein, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Celeste, thanks for having me. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Oh, it's such a good topic at this point in the year. We're right here at the beginning of the school year. What a great topic for this afternoon.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we speak, we've got kids marching off to school at all ages with their new highfalutin fancy backpacks and their new folders that they think are going to guarantee success, thinking that they're all psyched up, that they have a new clean slate.
Yeah.
And, boy, it can not be easy for those kids that are prone to distraction.
Yeah, yeah. What do you mean when you refer to a child as easily distracted? What are we talking about?
Well, what we're talking about are any one or more of really the following types of things. These are the types of kids that sometimes they almost look like a deer in the headlights. They don't seem to listen when they're directly spoken to. And the question is not that they do this, but how much they do this. They do this at a level and extent that it's a problem. They don't reliably finish their homework or their chores. They find it very hard to keep their mind on what they're doing, unless it's something, of course, that they find interesting, like playing video games or looking at the latest fashions. These are the types of kids that make a lot of careless mistakes due to poor attention. That can be a real problem. These kids are also very disorganized. And when I say kids, we're talking ages really 4 right up to 18. These types of children that are very distracted, they avoid. They just have, after a while, after encountering so much difficulty and frustration, they avoid doing homework, chores. They get very easily distracted to begin with. They pay attention to the wrong things, and they tend to be very forgetful. Now, again, it could be not all of these, but any of these that are a problem, to my mind, make for a distracted child.
Hmm. Now, what's the difference between distraction and disinterest?
Well, boy, you are raising a wonderful question there, and I'm glad you did. Look, we all have a right, and children do too, to find some things more interesting than others. So disinterest is maybe just truly that doesn't float your boat. You're not really into learning about history or math doesn't rock your world. But distraction, we're talking really about a different animal. We're talking about the ability to sustain attention over time compared to what most children do. I mean, we all may not like certain things, but we have to kind of tough it out. These types of children that are easily distracted, they just can't do it, and it can be for a variety of reasons.
One of the things you emphasize at the outset that I would like to emphasize here at the outset of our conversation this afternoon is that kids who are easily distracted are not lazy. How often are kids who are prone to being distracted misunderstood?
You know, and this is such a big, big part of the book. The book really is aimed at helping parents and educators manage these kids. It also provides lots and lots of tools, are in 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child. These kids come in my office, Celeste, they are demoralized, they feel shut down, they are shutting down. They are given that lazy label. Or the school might say, and believe me, there's a lot of great educators out there in schools, but people get frustrated. They'll say, and this is what I see often, seems to want to work only when he's interested, has the potential, but she doesn't seem to really care, not invested, which often is another way of saying lazy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the problem is you give a kid a label, they live up to it. It's a big, big problem when kids are labeled in this fashion.
Yeah. And before we go too much farther, I'd like to ask you to talk a little bit about what might be the upside for these kids. They can have all kinds of talents.
Well, right. I mean, look, I want to really make it clear, though, that the distractibility is a bona fide problem.
Yeah.
And we don't want to overly glamorize some of the other qualities that maybe are side benefits. But kids who are distracted, on the whole, they do tend to be out-of-the-box thinkers. They'll find more creative solutions. I'll have these kids in my office. This is a very funny anecdote here. And, you know, one kid was looking up. I have these track lights in my office, and one was saying, you know, that one in the middle there is about 6 inches off the center where it should be. And I was like, huh? You know, I've been here for 3 years. I never noticed that. Maybe that's why people see a shadow sometimes when they talk to me. I mean, these kids tend to notice things that are very extraneous and not necessarily what they need to notice. But they also sometimes can come up with new solutions. So you're right. They can be out of the box, but we don't want to ignore how much distractibility can be a self-esteem buster for these types of kids,
too. Yeah. What causes distractibility?
Again, a very, very important question. Glad you asked. No one thing causes distractibility, but what I can tell you is that a lot of kids that are distractible tend to have ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is more of a neurological problem. That part of the brain isn't working quick enough and efficiently enough so the child can't keep attention. Kids with distractibility problems may not have ADHD, or they may, but they may also have or not have any combination of the following. They could have anxiety. We all know when we're stressed out, when we're nervous, we can't focus that well. So I'll see a lot of children that have phobias. They might be worried in general about getting along with other kids. They might have anxiety about things going on at home. These are kids that get distracted. I see a lot of children with depression. And when you're depressed, it's very hard to meet the demands for attention in a classroom or anywhere. A lot of kids with distraction have learning disabilities. They dyslexia. Kids who have problems with math, all types of learning disabilities, autism, Asperger's disorder can also lend itself to distractibility, as well as stress, all sorts of things. I also will maintain that a lot of kids are overly saturated with media. I mean, we're in a day and age, the electronic age, we've got kids text messaging, we got kids watching 6 to 8 hours of TV a day. I mean, that can be very distracting also.
Yeah. Should we then try to calm down, to turn down the environment?
Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, I think we all could benefit from that.
Yeah.
You know, we're moving in a very quick age. We all want it now. We want the information now. And I think there's a price kids pay sometimes. Some kids also are overscheduled. I see some kids, you know, they just have way too much going on. I'm grateful my youngest daughter, age 11, this past year, and I'm not bragging, but I'm proud to say she did very well in the state finals in gymnastics here in Pennsylvania. But she made a decision this year to not do gymnastics. She's going into middle school. Practice was 6 to 9 every night. We had to drive her about a half hour and drive her back. That's 4 hours, plus Saturday practice. Am I saying she did the right thing? It's not about the right or the wrong thing, but for her, she knew it was just too much.
How many parents are out there, though, who wouldn't allow it? I mean, who wouldn't allow them to drop out of something that they're doing so well in?
And the whole thing about managing our children's lives or helping them manage their own, you're right. We're not puppeteers. We're parents. We can't pull their strings and expect them to do exactly what they want. This, you know, when we get parents that can't let go, that are strongly wedded and unfairly wedded to certain goals or plans for their kids, not that their kids are coming up with, you can have some real problems. In my other book, 10 Days to a Less Defiant Child, I talk a lot about that, how sometimes kids can get passive-aggressive, they'll lie, they'll get anger, they'll be self-destructive when they don't feel heard and understood. You brought up the idea of being understood. I'll tell you, it is, to me, children feeling understood, that's more important even than children feeling loved. I get plenty of people that come to my practice, and the kids will agree that they're loved, but they don't feel understood, and they often can go in a very difficult place.
Wow. One of the things that came through to me in 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child over and over and over again in a number of different situations is that listening to children is so important. Listen to what they have to say. Hear their frustration. Hear their concerns.
Oh, and Celeste, that's such a good point. And I think listening is soothing. I think in this day and age, we don't listen as well. Years ago, I really think I had to be humbled. My kids started to tell me, Dad, you're on the cell phone too much. You're checking your voicemail too much. You know, there's no better gift than looking at your child straight and listening actively, accurately, in a non-judgmental way. I think listening can be very soothing, and I think it helps kids feel centered. It empowers them, and it helps lower distractibility and defiant behavior. And that's why in 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child, I talk about that understanding, which so much is based on listening, is such a huge piece of the equation.
Yeah. What gets in the way of listening?
I think for a lot of parents, ironically, being loving, good parents in the way they think they should be gets in the way. You know, a kid who comes home upset, disgruntled about his math homework or his social studies or hers, and the parent says, you know, you keep this up, it's not going to get any easier. You're going to keep slipping. I don't know, you know, your brother seemed to buckle down. Why can't you? Or your friend Jake over there, he seems to work hard. Why can't you? So I think what gets in the way of listening for a lot of parents is their earnest love and caring that comes out in a very controlling, dominating way that shuts kids down. The kid says, it's not safe to talk to you, Mom or Dad. You're going to go off on me. You're going to scream. Why should I tell you how I feel? Why should I tell you that I haven't turned in 3 weeks of homework or I got a detention? Yeah. And so I think it really comes from parents who are just overly impassioned and not sensitive enough to understanding how much they need to back off.
Yeah. That's maybe also how we get into trouble with nagging.
Yes. Yes, nagging is a big problem, and I'll tell you, I see it so often here in my office. And I tell parents, and this is key, you know, 10 Days to a Less Defiant Child was the first of this two companion set of books, and in 10 Days to a Less Distracted, it's the same idea in a lot of ways, except it's a very different animal. But the idea is you want to be calm, firm, and non-controlling. Kids respond best when parents are calm, firm, and non-controlling. That seems to be the components that help avoid the power struggles by avoiding, by bypassing the reactivity of a kid. If you're going to tell your kid, you better buckle down and get that homework done, or I expect you to be on a schedule, or the TV goes off, there's nothing wrong with those values, but it's the delivery of a lot of parents when they're trying to mandate rules that can be rigid and difficult and kids rebel against.
Maybe you'd give us an example or two from your experience working with families of how a calm, firm, and non-controlling approach saves the day.
Well, I think, for example, this is interesting. I had, and again, this book, 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child, is not just about ADHD, but as you can imagine, I get some kids that I work with. And one kid, you know, the parent kept was very upset in the morning because the child wouldn't take his medication. Now, not all kids need medication. This kid seemed to benefit. And so the parents finally in a session, you know, the kid would take it, he wouldn't take it, and finally in a very calm, firm, non-controlling way, I modeled to the parents and I said, we'll call this kid Joey. Joey, look, if you could solve the problem, I mean, what do you suggest? You know, he turned around and said, well, they expect me to get up at 7 o'clock and take it. Why can't I take it at 7:25? No, it was funny. I mean, talk about out of the box. You know, this is, they really needed to let this kid feel like he had some control over it. That would be one example. Another one might be about homework. You know, you come home, you grab a snack, and I want you starting your homework by 3:30. Sounds very controlling. A calm, firm, non-controlling pattern might be, look, I need your help. I don't want to get into another year of drama and power struggles. Let's sit down together and come up with a time that you think is fair for you to start your homework. Can we agree that we're going to evaluate this over the next week or two, and then let's talk about it? You know, and then you reinforce the child, I really appreciate your listening to me, or it feels really good not to be ordering you around and yelling. That's calm, firm, non-controlling. You'll get a lot further.
Yeah. When I was a kid, there was a period of time where my parents insisted that I come home and start my homework immediately, and there would be no leisure activities until it was all finished.
Right.
And so what did I do? I said, it's all done.
Right.
I did it on the bus.
Right.
And then, you know, a couple weeks later, it caught up with me in a big way, but I think also it caught up with my parents.
Right. And you know, one of the biggest things that gets in the way with distracted children and teenagers is managing the emotions. I mean, the parents are so concerned. This is such a, you know, a very important issue. The parents saying, this is your life. You're throwing away your life. If you don't care about doing well in school, obviously, if you want to just, you know, flip hamburgers somewhere, which, by the way, that doesn't mean there's something wrong with somebody if they elect to do that, but parents want their kid to have all the opportunities possible. And so when the emotions get all churned up, my goodness, it can really backfire. And then parents forget to give a lot of the coaching and support. You know, there's a lot of strategies that I mention in this book for parents to learn how to help their child manage their time, manage their workload. But unless you have the relationship between parent and child that is favorable, the kid's not going to try or listen or be willing to, you know, test out any of these interventions.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, family psychologist Jeffrey Bernstein. He's the author of 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child. And we're talking this afternoon about helping kids who are easily distracted stay on task. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Our guest, family psychologist Jeffrey Bernstein. And we're getting a call coming in now, Dr. Bernstein and I, rather than having this person wait for us, as soon as we get them set up here, we'll go right to this listener. And that's what we'll do right now. Caller in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hi. I suspect that's me because I still hear you. My name's Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I wanted to, I just caught the tail end of what you were saying, and I wanted to commend you for being, as much as it were, right on track. My wife is a PhD in educational psychology, teaching human development. But I also wanted to relate an interesting story. Our child, through the first 7 years of grade school, really just didn't want to go to school, didn't want to do his homework. The problem was, and you may have addressed this, but if not, it might be interesting too, is my wife and I were on different pages. I'm military. My wife was military wife, but non-military. And we're different personalities, which, thank God, because it's the better way to do it. So I wanted to basically say, these are the rules, that's it. My wife basically wanted to say, I want our child to succeed. How can I help him? And while she and I never argued about it, never came to blows or even bitterness, we sat down one day and said, listen, both you and I have to be on the same page. We can't give two stories. Long story short, we sat down with our son and we said, B, we have decided that we are not going to help you with your homework after 9:30 p.m. because we just have things we want to do after that time. I mean, we'll do them with you if you're done with your homework. Also, if you don't want to go to school, you must tell us in the morning, I'm not going to school. Will you call for me? And we promise you that that's what we will do. If you tell us you don't want to go to school, we're not going to make you go. After that time, in seventh grade, he received A's, and they're a measure of whatever you want them to measure, all the way through high school. He was accepted as a presidential appointee to the Naval Academy, is a major in the Marine Corps, has four children, and we really like him a lot. I'll hang up and just listen to your comments.
Well, before you do, Dave, yeah. I just want to tell you, I am so moved by that story, and your story speaks so much to the whole approach of 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child, the whole idea of being calm, firm, non-controlling, and look at the results you got. That is fantastic.
Well, it taught me a major lesson, too, because I was controlling, but I've come to believe that somebody like me who wants to control doesn't want to control somebody else. They really want to control themselves. They want to believe that their whole world
right.
is ordered about their own desires and wishes. Whether I'm commenting on my wife's driving, which I haven't done in 10 years, knock on wood, or doing anything like that, worrying about whether my children still love me. I mean, they're 32 and 41 in the age range. All of that's about me, not about them. And the more I learn that, the more at ease I am, and the more comfortable I am in accepting what they give.
And let's just really be clear that this is a process. I mean, I can remember times of screaming at my kids and being a, doing all the things that I tell people not to do in the past. And I still have to work and be mindful and make sure, because at times you're right. When we're scared, we can end up being very controlling, and it can really be to the detriment of our kids. But I tell people, no disrespect to the dead, the only perfect people are in the cemetery. Because, you know, when your final day is there and you're about to be buried, everybody remembers what a wonderful person you are. But when we're alive, we all have hang-ups and things we got to try to work against. So I really like
your
story.
They never, ever really go away. They will resurface as the least best of our traits if we let them.
That's right.
I've been married for 42 years, and my wife will gently remind me, and I do her. Mm. Although I think she's perfect, so anyway.
What a guy.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. That's a really interesting insight, isn't it, about our expectations for one another. They're really so often about our expectations or what we want happening within ourselves.
You know, and we tend to get so frantic. I mean, look, I really think if your child is college-bound and he or she can do well in school and take that straight road through, that's great. You know, go through middle school, high school, do well, and get into a good college if that's what the child wants, or a vo-tech school, or whatever their aspiration is. But, you know, for some people out there, they have to go a more windy road, and it doesn't mean that you give up. You know, I've had some kids, they had a hard time. They couldn't get into regular college. They went to community college. They got their confidence up. Then they applied. Or somebody was in a certain profession, they switched to a trade that they really liked. You know, it's really about just persistence and resilience. But again, when people get into that shame piece, and when we feel pressured by those who love us most, our parents, or, you know, by the educators that hopefully care about us, it can backfire. You shut down. And I mean, I was in grad school at one point, and I had a hard time with my initial adjustment. It was very scary. And fortunately, I had a very caring mentor that reached out to me, or I don't know if I would have made it.
Mm. Also, it's important to know that we're gonna goof up occasionally, and then you admit that and move on.
Very true. And that's why I think what we really want to teach our kids is the ability to be resilient. You know, I talk a lot about don't catastrophize, don't beat yourself up. Learn how to look at the strengths. The book is really about helping parents see the areas where the child has strengths. Often parents focus, well, you know, he doesn't get his math work done, but yet there might be another subject that he or she does really well. Okay, well, can we get that teacher involved working with the other teacher? Maybe we can transfer and generalize some of those things that work, Or can we get the kid writing an English class about skateboarding instead of necessarily the curriculum all the time? What adjustments can we make? How can we keep this child interested and meet him?
When and how should parents approach the school about what's going on inside the building and then and also at home?
Well, here's the thing. I never had an adult come here and sit in my office and say, what screwed up my life, what messed me up, was that my parents were too involved with my education. They were caring and tried to support me, you know? So my answer to your question, Celeste, is if your child is struggling, you get in there, and you want to advocate, not irritate. And I talk a lot about that in the book, how to approach the school. I have a whole chapter on dealing with school and how to be successful and how to form a team with the school. The short answer to your question is right from the beginning, and you don't have to be a nag. Most teachers today have email. Be friendly, be courteous, send them a thank you. You know, they need strokes, too, and they need to know that you appreciate their efforts. These teachers have so many kids and parents. So form a healthy alliance. Keep a strong connection. Let the teacher know or the learning support who's ever involved with your child what they're doing right. Catch them doing things, quote-unquote, right, not just, you know, reacting to things that you feel are unfair to your child. Be very supportive to the school. Be active. Be involved.
We're talking this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine about helping children who are easily distracted stay on task. Our guest is family psychologist Jeffrey Bernstein, author of 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our first caller this afternoon said that seventh grader, if you tell us you don't want to go to school, you've got to tell us if you're not going to go to school and we'll call it in for you. But I think that a lot of parents wouldn't be that open about that. However, you know, what do you do? What would your advice be to a parent who hears a child say, I don't want to go to school anymore. I've had it.
Well, I think the most important thing, it goes back to what we said earlier in our talk today, Celeste, is to listen. Not lead with the life lecture about what the child's going to be missing, but really listen. I mean, I had, you know, some kids that I've worked with where it seemed like there were academic issues, but they were secondary to social issues. Kids feeling ostracized, walking the hall at lunch, getting in trouble because they didn't feel like they fit in socially. So you want to look at what's going on with the child. Try to look at his or her interactions with teachers. Look at his or her ways of asserting himself and asking for help. Talk to the child and listen to the feelings that go on and the thoughts in their head. You know, I'm a failure. I'm just stupid. I'll never be what you expect me to be. A lot of times kids, you know, if they say they don't want to go to school anymore, it's a lot better than them, you know, locking themselves up and doing an overdose and not telling anybody. We hear about these horror stories. Don't freak out as a parent. Really try to realize your child is calling out for help. He or she is hurting. Listen. Be attentive. Get the guidance counselor involved. If you need to and you can do it, get an outside mental health professional that you know is qualified and recommended by other people. Try to get past the impasses. You know, don't just do the same pattern of responding. Listen more. Be encouraging. I think all those things will help. Show the child in a very caring, non-intrusive way what he or she has done. Tell them why you love him, why you're proud of him, and be very specific. I love how you became an Eagle Scout. I love how you, you know, went out for cheerleading and made it. I love how you coordinated the activities in the church youth group. That is so cool. Give this child a sense of efficacy. Let's see if we can spread this sense of being solid and effective to the area of school. Have check-ins with the school. Too many times, there's a conference with the teacher, with the assistant principal, maybe learning people, and then there isn't the follow-up. Have frequent follow-up. Loudest hinge gets the most oil. Don't be, again, I say don't irritate, but advocate.
Let's take another call. A listener, I believe, in Villa Grove on line one. Good afternoon.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, great. Hey, you just mentioned earlier about homework and coming up with a plan with the child, having talked to the child and seeing what he thinks would be a good time frame or just even a good time of the day to do homework. I like to give my child some free time when she gets off the bus, but then there comes a time when she needs to, and she is ADHD and needs to do homework fairly early in the evening. And so you come up with this plan. She agrees to it. You say for 2 weeks, then we'll reevaluate. Fine. What if the child decides she doesn't want to follow through? Then what are the consequences?
Well, that's an outstanding question. And I actually have a chapter in this book called Heading Off the Homework Wars. So I'm glad you asked this question. Look, it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy. I think what you'd want to do is break it down, though, and look at the pieces that work. Are there certain subjects that she can do at that time? Are there certain subjects she can do later? Can you modify it? Okay, this is the chunk of time we want to work, but we're going to introduce, after every 15 or 20 minutes of work, a break, as long as you supportively direct the child back. Also, I want to respond to one word you used, consequences. I get a lot of I'm not going to call them consequence hungry. I'm going to call them consequence ravenous parents who are at their wits' end, very frustrated. You know what? You didn't sit down and do this. You just lost your Nintendo, or you're not going to the party this week. I think consequences are good if they're done in moderation. Too often, the consequences end up being something that the kids react to. It fuels defiant behavior and lying. I'm not saying you're wrong for wanting to do some consequences, but be very careful and judicious about how many. I'd rather you see you catch the child do certain things right. Maybe the child burns out. Maybe in the morning you can do just a little mop-up of the homework, not all of it, you know. So I think that'll work. Have consults with the teacher. Maybe the child needs a little extra help. What if it takes him a little longer? Maybe the assignments need to be modified if there's a valid, you mentioned ADHD for your child. You know, what is the school really doing? Does the child have an educational plan, a 504? By federal law, there are certain provisions that can be put in place to help modify workload. Give the child a resource room. All these things I cover in my book, but they're very, very important.
Oh, wow. Do we follow through all of that? And then you're trying to give the child still her control, but she doesn't follow through. I mean, what are you going to do? There has to be something. Do you just say, okay, well, because we were told initially just to stay out of her homework. That is between her and the teacher. But yet at the same time, if you give her way and you say, okay, here's your spot. This is where you're supposed to do your homework. This is what we agreed on. Now, you need to start on your homework. And she sits there and reads her book for the next hour. Okay?
Right.
So do you just say, oh, okay, if that's what you chose to do, and because there's no having, it becomes a control issue. You say, okay, well, you do homework after supper or something like that, or before you go to bed, or there's no TV. All that can fall flat on your face.
Well, and look, there is no guarantee, but we're talking about the maximizing the likelihood that you're going to make a change. And I think, again, you want to keep your reactivity low. I would suggest, and I heard that you said you've done all that, but I would keep doing that. How old is your child?
12.
I'm sorry?
12.
12. Okay, and has your child failed a grade yet?
Come close.
Okay. Well, then I would keep coming back to the school and seeing what kind of modifications they can make. I would also ask you, you mentioned your child has ADHD. Does the child take medication?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Has the medication, have the teachers been actively filling out every couple months reevaluation forms, and has that been fed back to the pediatrician?
We didn't know about that one. That's a new one for me.
Okay.
I grab at anything I can get.
Well, if you email me at Dr. Jeff for help, just go to my website, Dr. Jeff, D-R-J-E-F-F, online.com, D-R-J-E-F-F, online.com, and you can shoot me an email right through the website, and I will send you a copy of a It's actually called the ADHD monitoring system, and it was developed by a guy down in North Carolina, and he actually gave me permission, and I have a copy of this in the book, 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child. It's called the ADHD monitoring system, and this is something that you can have the teachers fill out. It was developed by Dr. David Rabiner of Duke University. And again, he gave me permission. I have that in the book, but I'll be happy to send you a copy of it as well.
Oh, okay. Well,
and the more that you have the teachers filling out a standardized measure and then feeding that information back to the prescriber, maybe there needs to be a dose increase. Maybe there needs to be some kind of change in the medication. I will say to you, the book, which I can't get into all of it today, the book has lots of educational interventions, some which you may be doing, some which you may not. There's recent research at the University of Buffalo suggesting that actually if you do these educational interventions, in many cases the doses needed of the medication for ADHD can be lowered.
And there are 24 tips in the book to help kids get their homework done, and that
Yes, there are.
And that takes up 22 pages of the book. I was really impressed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I hope this was of help.
Yeah, let's take another call. A listener in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Would the speaker consider that ADD, that is attention deficit disorder, is sort of an over or is one aspect of the distractibility, or vice versa? Distractibility is one aspect of ADD.
I would very much consider that, and I think I'm really appreciating your reinforcing a point that I made at the beginning, that the distractibility problem is not just caused by ADHD. It's caused by kids with anxiety, depression. It's caused by kids that are overly stimulated with media. It's caused by parents that are well-intended and loving but are overly reactive, creating more games and avoidance strategies. So there's a host of factors involved, and I'm really glad you reinforced that point.
Well, but you consider the distractibility to be a sort of a blanket term that would include ADD and lots of other things.
Yes, I do. Like I'm saying, there's different causes. And actually, and actually, it is called today ADHD. They changed it from ADD, just to clarify that.
Yeah, well, do they use Ritalin, for example, in distractibility treatment?
Well, one of the most annoying things for a lot of loving parents is that in a lot of cases, medication can help, and it becomes a very emotional issue. Now, again, there's recent research showing that when you use the educational interventions, when you slow things down, when you give more, you know, teaching kids how to break complex tasks down into smaller ones, how to take breaks, how to be organized, how to get the support, in some cases, the medication dosages can be lowered. I imagine in some they may not need them. But, yes, in some cases, particularly I've had some kids with very severe ADHD, they do benefit from medication.
Yep. Okay, fine.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. How common is it to see a number of problems coexisting in a child?
You know, Celeste, that is a really, really good point, too. We tend as a society to want to kind of come up quickly with what's going on with a child. We want to talk about the fix for that child. I have a chapter in 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child, and it's entitled Conquering Coexisting Conditions. And again, as I said, a child can have many types of things going on with their distractibility. They can have depression. They can have anxiety. They can have, you know, stress. They have all sorts of other issues. They can have oppositional defiant disorder, which I address in 10 Days to a Less Defiant Child. These are all problems, and you really want to see the child as a whole. You want to get input. That's why you want to have contact with the school. The school teacher spends 6 hours a day with your child. Then again, it gets tricky. You don't want to just go by the school. A lot of these kids can hold themselves together, and then when they get home, they unravel. So you want to observe your child with peers. You want to listen to how they do from other parents. In sports, you want to really have 360 vision to try to see all the other types of things that go on with a child.
Yeah. You mentioned peers, and there's also a chapter in the book about peers. And I think one of the saddest things for a parent to hear is a child say, I don't have a friend.
Right.
You got some advice there? How do you tackle that problem? Because it's heartbreaking to hear, and you want to help.
Well, it is very heartbreaking to hear. And, you know, that's a chapter in a book called Overcoming Perils with Peers. And, yes, I mean, a lot of kids who have distractibility, they have a hard time reading cues. They may want to join in a pickup game of basketball, and they have a hard time judging when there's a break in the action to join in, or there's a conversation going, and they just don't know how to kind of finesse their way in. Or they act too animated. They show themselves as too eager and enthusiastic. I have a number of gentle giants in my practice here in Pennsylvania, these kids that are well-meaning, nice kids. They just want to feel accepted, and they're big kids, and yet they get picked on because they're just so easy to read and manipulate. They're easy targets. So I think one thing is you want to find activities that your child can really fit in, civic activities, scouting, church groups. Put them in groups where they can maybe be a little off from some of the mainstream, like in the cafeteria at lunch. Keep them feeling like they have other opportunities to connect. Get them. These kids tend to do better in smaller groups, maybe one-on-one, than having three or four friends over, because they can do better. It's slower. It's less distractible.
Yeah, and you're more focused. And
you're more focused.
Also in a group activity like scouting or church or whatever, there are often activities that everybody is working on, and there's adult supervision as well. And,
right.
There's likely to be more than one adult and a smaller group of children.
Exactly.
Yeah, that can be a great help. I want to, before we go, I thought this was a tip that parents might find useful this afternoon for being with their kids, and that is to share your thinking out loud.
Celeste, that is a really, really good point. When I talk, like, and sometimes I'll say to my kids, well, I used to. I don't do this as much, and I've worked really hard, and I still have to do it. But, like, you should do this. You should start your homework done. For example, that should word, I try to eliminate that. It creates a power struggle. So, like, I might say, you know, I just heard myself say should to you. I'm asking you to please consider this. I'm asking you to give this a try. You know, like the caller that called in, Dave, and talked about how, you know, being calm, firm, and non-controlling is really important. And if you share your thought process, you become more accessible and emotionally safe, and the child will feel less distracted.
Yeah. There's one of the anecdotes in the book, there's a woman who, you know, she's struggling with this child, and she just throws up her arms one day. She says, she goes to her child, she hugs him, and she says, I love you, but honey, what am I going to do? And it was like an epiphany for the two of them, I think. She said what she was feeling, and he said, you know, he got it, and it's like, okay, I can do this.
And that child turned around. I ran into that woman a couple months after writing that part in the grocery store, and it was such a success story. It's been wonderful, and he ended up holding a job this summer. He's really branched out. So I'm so honored that you read the book so closely, Celeste, and could share that with the audience.
Yeah. Well, there we have to leave it. We're out of time. Dr. Bernstein, thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon. And just to make sure here that we've got your website correctly, it's Dr. Jeff Online.
Yes, drjeffonline.com. And again, the book, 10 Days to a Less Distracted Child.
Very good. Published by Marlowe & Company. Our guest this afternoon has been family psychologist Dr. Jeffrey Bernstein.